So this is lesson 15, which means we are getting really close. I think we have, is it four or five more lessons? And that's it. To finish Hebrews. It's pretty amazing. And I still feel like we've left so much on the table with Hebrews. But hopefully we've gotten kind of an idea. I do want to review where we've been with our pictures there so that we understand why the author of Hebrews is writing what he's writing now. So, in chapter 1, what did we learn? Jesus is, and he can. Chapter 2, Jesus is, and he can. Chapter 3, Jesus is. Jesus is the Son, and he can build and keep his house. Chapter 4. Good. So Jesus is the storytelling high priest who wants to retell our story as amazing grace so we can rest. Seems like a long one, but it's a really important one. Chapter 5. Good. Jesus is the, what did we say? Disestablishment. Yeah. I hate to say anti. It sounds so harsh, although he was. But counter-establishment high priest, the other side, who is willing to go out and offer grace. Chapter 6. Notice I finally remembered, and I'm not bringing out my meat and milk anymore. Jesus is?
The word made flesh.
Right, the priest who brings word to flesh, offering the process of grace. Right. Chapter 7. Whoops. Chapter 7 is open. Jesus, now we're talking about Jesus' priesthood once we get to 7.
Better priesthood and takes us from practicing to the real thing.
Good. So Jesus has a better priesthood, a Melchizedek one, which is in the realm of reality and not the practice of reality. Chapter 8. Jesus gives a better covenant, which is a gift rather than a measuring stick. Right. Chapter 9. Right, better sanctuary. Right. Good. So Jesus has a better sanctuary rather than a box. He is in a body and bodies. Do you like how I positioned the body today?
Yeah.
Chapter 10. Good. So Jesus is a better sacrifice, a living one rather than a dead one with strings attached. Okay? So 1 through 10, the writer of Hebrews has established who Jesus is and because of who he is, what he's offering us. And then he goes from in the middle of chapter 10 on, he says, so a natural response to who Jesus really is, not who we've pictured him as, or not who we decide he is, not that box that we've put him in, but this reality, if these are the realities of who Jesus is, then there's a very natural response that comes to it. And he invites us then to respond in natural, in a natural way. And so we had that first time in chapter 10, he says, if Jesus is literally showing you that God is giving you freedom, that he loves you unconditionally for who you are, so you can be naked and vulnerable, then your response can be to draw near. If then chapter 11 talked about if Jesus is truly the truth, the incarnation of what is real, that it is a living, loving, I'm trying to rephrase how we had talked about it last week, that you're going to, that he is good only and gives you good, if that is the truth, then I can, do you remember what the thing is? If I could draw near because, I can draw near intimately because he gives me freedom to. If he is good and only good, then I can draw or hold fast to What was last week's lesson on? Faith, right? I can draw near to faith, which is that action of trusting. If the truth is that he is good and is always doing good for me, then I can hold on to an action of trust every day. And so today he says, if I understand that it is joy that I'm responding to, then we can endure. We can press on. And so he's going to talk about the joy of Jesus and how that allows us to endure. I'm going to flip it just a little bit. I'm going to talk about the joy first of Jesus and then the enduring, even though as chapter 12 goes, it talks about endurance first. But if somebody would read for me 12, 1 through 4 first, and really loud.
Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You have not resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin.
Okay, so the joy of Jesus. One of the things we need to know is it says that the joy was set before him. What that means is that it was what he saw. He saw joy. It is what he lived for, and it is what he never took his eyes off of. That's what was set before him, was joy. And the joy that was set before him was that he was able to accomplish recreation. So it goes all the way back to Hebrews 1, that Jesus is the one who created, and he is going to recreate. So that is the joy that is set before him. I get to recreate. And in recreating, it means that he is going to completely restore God's kingdom, God's intention, which means complete unity returned. The unity of heaven and earth returned, and everything in heaven and earth will be completely reunited to its wholeness. That's the joy that set before Jesus. At all times, this is what he saw. It is joy. Now, seeing it as joy doesn't mean that he didn't feel pain, anguish, any of that. But it was always joy that was before him. So what that would mean then is that, and I'm just going to skim the surface of that because it means so much, and we've gone through so many of those things. But that means that he would, first of all, be restoring us to unity with God. A free union with God. Remember that the union relationship that God had at the beginning with Adam and Eve and what he intended all of us to have was a free union. Very different than some of the unions we think about. But it was a free union. And in order for that to happen, that means that he has to open a new invitation to us in which we are free to choose. That means then that he has to have an invitation that is constantly open, and it's constantly open to being received or rejected. And if that's the case, what that also means is that he has to give us some new way of seeing this open invitation, because we don't understand that kind of invitation that is there. So he has to give us a means to be able to see that and understand that. Which also means if he's giving us his eyes to be able to read the invitation, he's going to have to teach us how to use those eyes. And my eyes are not focusing today, so to read my notes is a little, wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm thinking about joy in this context,
mm-hmm.
and then joy and like consider joy, my brother.
Mm-hmm.
So can you kind of give us a definition? Maybe everybody
of joy?
Yeah.
How about if we go through it first, and then I think we'll see a little bit more. And just so you know, this is an overview of 12. We have 3 weeks on 12. So this is an overview. We're going to talk about considerate joy next week.
Okay.
And then we'll go into the rest of 12. So hopefully by the end we'll have a little more idea. I do think that we do have to redefine a lot of things. But in doing so, we first have to begin to see what's happening here. And I do think as we see what's happening, then we'll understand, oh, it is really joy that I'm thinking of. But because we don't think that that's joy, we don't think the process is joy, we'll look at that. Ultimately, what it means is he's going to have to walk us through the process of restoration. He's not going to just leave it there. But those are the pieces, the really high-level pieces of what it means to accomplish recreation for Jesus. And in that, notice for all of us, when we offer an invitation, it is always costly to the one who offers an invitation. Because in offering an invitation, you do all the work to get it ready to present, and then you relinquish complete control. So there is a huge cost in offering an invitation, because it is always work for the one who invites. But in inviting, if it's a true invitation, you then stand back and go, whatever you choose, your choice. I relinquish control there. And that's here what Jesus is doing. It's like when you prepare, have you ever prepared a surprise party for anyone? How many of you have prepared a surprise party for someone? How much work did it take?
A lot,
right? A lot. But in the preparing of it, how are you feeling?
Excited.
Excited. Why?
Surprise. Because you know it's going to be great.
Great for whom?
The person you're surprising.
Yeah. There's this, I just love doing this because it's going to be just so, I cannot wait for them to receive that.
The other thing, too, is if you plan enough of them, you realize sometimes it doesn't quite end up being a surprise.
Exactly.
And the agreement, the unspoken agreement is, I'll pretend like I don't know. Everybody wants that. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants that.
Exactly. You want that joy. You want to see somebody else filled with joy, right? You want that. I mean, and you're working toward it. You're giving a lot. It's costing you a lot. But you do usually give up the right to whether they actually choose to receive it. Now, how many of you have ever made up, whether it's a surprise party or a surprise of any kind, did a lot of work for it, and the person didn't really receive it as you wanted them to?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I tend to be that person because my husband is a great gift giver, but it's always expensive, and I'm horrible. Every Christmas morning, I do it to him, and I can see, and I'm like, oh, I did it again. And I'm like, a Pandora bracelet that's failed? I don't need that. Please. And
then,
I need help.
Yeah, and that's
receiving of it.
That's exactly where we are, is that receiving of it. And we've talked so much about how unlikely we are to receive. We just don't do well with receiving. But the preparing of it, the person who's preparing it has this anticipation. They know this is a good thing, a good gift to give them, and they're anticipating. And in their anticipation, they find joy because they know that it's a good gift for someone.
The other element of that is sometimes when you're the one preparing and there's a glitch in the plan, you start almost, the person then, the recipient almost can end up in a frustrated state. Like I'm thinking about one time my husband planned a surprise birthday party for me, and he had asked me, well, No, I had said, well, why don't we do XYZ for dinner? Well, it was really a surprise party. Mm-hmm. There were all these dinner plans planned someplace else where guests were. But I didn't know that. And the next thing I know, he's on the phone ordering pizza. And I'm thinking, I don't want pizza. And so he had to put up with my... Normally, he would be like, what do you want for dinner for your birthday? Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, mm-hmm. this, and he'd be okay. And I'm starting to get frustrated because I didn't want to order pizza. But he knows there's something better, but I don't
right.
know that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how many
yeah.
times does
what
God know what's behind the
yeah.
blanket
trusting
board?
Our
yep.
covenant partner?
Yep.
Know?
And that really talks to where we live.
You know, Joe, I'm thinking, okay, so the point of our sermon, the sermon note from Sunday was, transformation is priceless but has a price.
Mm.
And I was thinking about how that, and even love, right? Because love
yep.
in a covenant,
right?
Right. It always costs somebody. How in some ways our world is selling us exactly the opposite message
yep.
on both of those things.
Correct.
Like, we're always searching for, like, the fastest, you know, transformation, the shortest possible route to transformation,
right.
you know, the way that we could, like, control it or make it happen, you know, and even, like, with love, like, as soon as it starts becoming hard work, it's, like, a sign that something's wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just realizing how so much of this talk of transformation, there's a desire for both in our world, but there's, like, this counter message of it should
right.
be without a price.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And that we're going to actually get to that. And remember last week we even talked about, I think Richard Rohr says, manufactured transformation is not transformation. If you're trying to manufacture it, it's not transformation.
Well, it's like the dead animals didn't really stay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we look at what Christ did. And in the preparation, he knew that he was preparing a good gift. And he's got this great joy because he knows that he's going to give us a good gift. And there's this just great joy through it all. No matter the cost, no matter how much time it took him or how hard it was or how painful it was, there's this joy because he knows that the gift is beyond anything they could ever imagine. And he knows that he also has to let go and control and let them choose it, whether or not they're going to not only choose to receive it, but choose to receive it with joy. So, in doing that, he also had to endure through the whole thing. He had to endure vulnerability, his incarnation. And we talked about what that means, that incarnation, that becoming fully human. But he also had to endure the death. That when it talks about that he endured for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame. Don't make a mistake here. It's not that he despised the fact that he had to get there. What he despised, the shame there, is talking about the distortion of the human image of God. The distortion. And he had to endure taking on the full distortion of God's image in a human body. He had to take that on, that shame that distorted God's image. All of that he endured in order to get to resurrection, that renewed life, and a position where he could offer that renewed life, that exact renewed life, which is why it says that he ends up at sitting at the right hand of the throne of God. And that throne is where the mercy and grace come from. Yeah.
Did he have to endure living with God's distorted image, or?
He didn't live with God's distorted image. So when he lived, he lived amongst distorted images.
Right.
On the cross, that's what he took on.
Okay.
So on the cross, he took on the distorted image, the complete distorted image of God. And that's why we had that separation there. But in the living, he lived amongst the distorted image. And so all of the consequences that go along with living amongst distorted images. And so his joy required endurance through those. And so it brings us to the response then, our response to his joy, our response to him preparing all of that and the joy that he has, even though in that joy he had to endure. And our response, it tells us here, is since we have, and we'll talk about the great cloud of witnesses, but basically to run with endurance. This is, from the very beginning, we said the theme of Hebrews is to consider Jesus, therefore draw near, hold fast, press on. This is the press on. This is running with endurance. Keep on keeping on. And so we're going to talk now for a lengthy amount of time, I think, about what it means to endure, to run with endurance. Notice that it says here to run with endurance. It doesn't say to run with speed. It doesn't say to run with efficiency. Nor does it say to run with flair, panache, you know, just, wow, look at how she runs really cool. And I notice runners notice people, how they run, right? I hear Bill, look how he runs. Oh, look how she runs. I could care less. But some of us do notice how people run. But he says, no, it's run with endurance that I want to talk about here. And it's really necessary that we understand this because the connotation of endurance is a very negative one. And in here, it's very positive. So that's where we're going to change
What's different about endurance and running is it is the one thing that takes practice.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. So we're going to look at that and look at running specifically. I really debated about having us all go outside, and I was going to have Robin, because I know she runs, and Carmel run for us down the street. the two runners over here are dressed for it. But I want us to talk about what that really means. So what specifically endurance means is to set your course to abide under, to be patient in your circumstances, knowing that the life of faith is a marathon and not a sprint. Knowing, setting your course that you're going to need to sustain energy, life for a long time. That's the kind of race he's looking at right here, the author. So we're going to talk about some marathons. My son Christian ran a marathon several years ago, and he brought his friend Chris up to run it as well. And they had been, they began to train together, and then Chris Neal got busy and did other things, and so he really didn't train. Now, we didn't know this, nor did Christian know this. He just figured he was training on his own. So they got to the race, and they began to run together, and boy, like almost right away, Chris Neal just pulled away, and he just started running fast and pulled away and just left Christian right there to run alone. And he thought, okay. So when the race was over, we knew where we were going to meet them, so we went and met Christian and said, where's Chris? And he said, he pulled away from me early on, and I never saw him again. So I expected him to be here. We waited. You were in Syria. We waited probably an hour and a half, 2 hours. Okay, the race is done. Everyone's shutting up. Finally, Chris Neal hobbles in. And he tells us, I couldn't make it. I just couldn't make it. And in the middle, I went to one of the first aid stations and said, I can't make it. Could you bring me home? And they said, no, we're not bringing you back. You're going to have to walk the race. Just finish walking it. And he was in a lot of pain, but basically he had just outrun what he could do. And so I remember walking to the car, and I don't know if Christian asked him or I asked him something about, so didn't your training help? And he said, oh yeah, I never did train. I ran those 2 weeks with you, and that's all I ever did. And we all just stopped. Are you kidding me? You tried to run 26 miles and you never trained past the 3 or 4 miles you were running? Never trained. So not only did he not train, as Robin said, endurance requires training, but he also then just started running at a normal pace and, of course, gave out. So that is not what endurance is, not training and then running fast.
You know what's funny, though? like on an emotional level, like, you know, it's not all of us run marathons. Like with my son, he's like going to therapy for stuff and anxiety. Like we'll talk about stuff, and then the next week I'll come and I'll be like, okay, I tried all that and it didn't change.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're
yep.
running a marathon.
Yep. Yes.
She's like,
yes.
This is a marathon.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, okay. Then the next week I'll be like, I just, you know what? We tried those adjustments and it's still not all better. And
uh-huh.
She's like, okay. Remember last week when I said marathon?
Uh-huh.
Like, I actually meant marathon.
Yeah.
It's going to be like a long,
yes.
long road.
Yes.
Anyway, so it's just kind of
right.
funny how.
And that's exactly what he's talking about here, is he's saying, so look, the life of faith, it's not one of those spurt of tense determination. I'm going to do this. And I'm going to run. I'm going to run right through it. I'm going to run so fast that I get over these hurdles really fast so I get to that goal. I just want to get to the goal and be done with it. That's not faith. Faith is not trying to get fast, quick, through the goal, through the race, so that I can be at the goal. It's not to be, I want to be done with this thing and go on to the next thing quick so I can go on and go on. And when do we normally feel that? It's when we're in the hard circumstances, right? It's like, I just want to get through this so I can be at the other end.
Right. Discipline ourselves,
yes.
So we can get
right.
there
right. So we have a plan,
yep.
And our plan is to sprint.
Yep.
Our plan is to sprint. And here's the thing about physical sprinting as opposed to running a marathon, is you do it anaerobically. And anaerobically means without breath. So you run fast and you just burn all the glucose immediately to get to somewhere fast and get done. And what happens then is your body actually burns the glucose to get the energy to go out, rather than what the body is supposed to do, is the glucose is supposed to gradually go to the muscles, so the muscles have the ability to keep on working for a long time. But in a sprint, because you're not bringing air to your body, you're just full force determination, I'm going to get there fast and be done with it, your body doesn't get air, the glucose runs up, and so if you have to go beyond that short distance, your muscles say absolutely not.
It's 45 minutes.
45 minutes, that's it.
That's all you have of being able to sprint on sugar.
Yes.
And then you're done.
So 45 minutes. This is what happened to Chris Neal in the race. He completely, his muscles said, no way. I cannot go. I have no food. You have not given me food. You've used up my food. And so he couldn't go without breath. Anaerobically. This, though, is how we think we live the faithful life, particularly when we get into those circumstances that are not fun, that are hard. Those hard graces, we sit there and go, yeah, I'm going to sprint through this one. I do not want to do a marathon through this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, Sherilyn?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm sitting here in the midst of this really hard circumstance. I don't want this to take a long time. I want to sprint through it. And every time we sprint through it, we give up. And I heard this. I mean, I hear this in the midst of hard circumstances. I give up. Well, of course you give up. You can't go any farther because you're sprinting without breath. Which is interesting that running like that means without breath. Because what did we very first talk about? What is God's grace?
Yeah.
His breath. His breath. And so that when we run the life of faith anaerobically, without breath, we run it without God. We're trying to get there. Here's the funny thing is, our whole determination is, I just want to get to the union with God. But I don't want the union as I'm getting there. I just want to get there, but I don't want it to get there. That's the sprinting. That's the running anaerobically. That's not living, breathing, the moment.
Don't you think part of the other problem is too, sometimes when we want to sprint, we're not sprinting toward union with God. We're sprinting toward a change in circumstance.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. We're always sprinting toward a picture of God being out there, of the good being out there, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting because it's not ever true. And we'll see why in a minute. So enduring is not this tense determination to get through it as fast as possible. Enduring is actually receiving a very restful rhythm where I can breathe. So what do they always tell you when you're running? You're running at a right pace if you can talk, right? With the person with you. The one who's giving you breath. If you can run the race, if you can live the life of faith, breathing in the conversation with the one who's giving you breath, then you're running at the right pace. Then you're running with breath. You're running with him rather than just hoping to get through this so I can be with him. When he's offering to be with you right now in the hard circumstance to give you breath. This is where his breath is. You having a picture of him being there is not true. He's here right now. He's not there. He's here. And this is the only place he can be real to you is here. So you're running toward a false picture when he is here in the midst of every single moment and circumstance. And this is where he wants to be with you to give you breath.
And I think we like to compartmentalize, like, this is the area where I need faith, this is the area when I need God. And I mean, kind of along those marathon lines, I ran a half marathon. And so I trained, and every day I had my training time. Well, actually not every day. But and then 2 days before the race, there was a donut eating contest. and there was a prize. And so I ate 23 donuts in 5 minutes, and I won $100. And then 2 days later, I tried to run the half marathon, and I made it 12 and a half miles and started, like, seeing spots. But kind of the same idea that in life we like to say, this is where I need faith. Like, okay, this is, I wake up and I read my Bible, and okay, this is like my faith part. Uh-huh. And really, like, just like a marathon is more than just the training. It's like your diet, sleeping, everything. And I think that's also how we develop endurance.
Yes.
Realizing that it's living in faith, not just like doing.
Not trying to get there. Yeah, that's exactly, not just doing faithful things. That's really good, Rebecca, because it is the moment by moment living with what the breath God is giving you right now. Right now. And that's why I thought it was really curious when I asked you, when do you most feel that joy? And we're always like, it's in the memory, or it's hope, mostly in the memory. When he's trying to give it to you right now, are you missing it? If I'm running in any way, if I'm living in any way, not in the moment, I'm rejecting his presence. I'm rejecting the breath he's trying to give me right now. This is the only place he's at, right now. But I reject it when I decide that I just need to get through this. And I'll meet God on the other side. In fact, even the way that we have always portrayed Hebrews 12 is a portrayal of, keep your eyes on Jesus because he's right there at the end. Well, I'm sorry, but in a marathon, can you see the end?
No.
No, you cannot.
And then when you finally can, it feels like they keep moving
it. Yeah. right, exactly. Exactly. Jesus never said, hey guys, I'm at the finish line. Just come to me. Never anywhere in Scripture does it say that. And yet, that's always the picture that we give of Hebrews 12, which I think is just unusual and sad. So, am I running to get to the finish line, hoping to have that union with God, and completely missing the union with God that he's giving me today, right now, in the hard circumstance or the good circumstance, whatever it is? And so those moments where it's really easy, like yesterday in that fog, where I literally felt the union and communion with God. It was just so over and strong. But then to continue to go through the day without that, is to continue to say, yeah, I knew it, but yeah, oh yeah, you're at the end. I'll just do some good things to get there without you, without that breath. It is really important for us to understand. I think so many times we have relegated this idea of being in the moment now to a new age idea, or an idea that's kind of like transcendental and not Christian. When the whole piece of what God is trying to do, what Christ is trying to do, is to be with you now and give you himself now, which is what we've been trying to do all through this semester, is looking now. Where do you see Christ? He's giving you himself now. Where do you see him? Having eyes to see, practicing those eyes so that we do have endurance, that we do practice, so that when we are in a hard situation, we are beginning to see, but Christ is here. He's giving himself here in this hard situation, even. He's giving himself here.
It's interesting because when we talk about practice spiritually, we don't think of it, we think of it as a, like a something in your spirit.
Right.
Something not existent, I go to physical therapy for my brain, and it's really interesting because the left and right brain, like, the more you use your left brain, the more that practice will actually cause you to function differently, and the more you use your right side. And it's interesting because your left side is all about future and past. It's all about planning. It's all about use of language. And the right side is all about being present in the moment and experiencing yourself as connected and not separate and not your ego. So it's interesting that you like, and I can tell practicing and using my right side how your body shifts. And so it really is like the more that you live a life outside of the moment, the more you will physically live outside of the moment.
Right. Mm. Right.
Well,
yeah.
I was even thinking how in some ways we've come to a place in the church where we have a very left brain theology. Like,
yes, absolutely.
I caught myself saying to my kids, look at that. Like, look at the mountains. Look at this. Look at the fog. I've literally been like, look at the fog. Look at the sunset. Like, do I tell them, like, let's run out and experience the fog. Let's run out and experience the sunset. Like, so much of, like, my even teaching of the Lord is, like, look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, like, come and experience.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Which is interesting. But then I was thinking about that reality thing you were talking about of, like, even the mirage, like the false reality. Almost, you know, physically, the metaphor of it, like, coming from dehydration. You know, like, your false reality essentially comes from not having living water.
Yep.
In the process, mm-hmm. from you sprinting without ever getting God, causes you to begin to, like, see a different reality. Do you know what I mean? That you're chasing after? I don't know, I just thought
yep.
that was
interesting. It's very true. It's very true.
And then you look at the four themes you said about Hebrews, it's consider Jesus, draw near to him, hold fast, and then press on.
Yep.
So you're pressing on
yep.
with him.
Right, exactly. And that is the point of him saying, when we come to fix your eyes on Jesus, it's not that he's at the finish line. He never said, hey, I'm somewhere in your future, so just, you know, keep on going until you get there. But it is how we think. It is how we teach, and it is how we live.
And sometimes it's how we feel.
And sometimes it is how we feel. But that's why it takes the practice. And now he says, I've got ways for you to practice this. I've got ways for you to actually get through this. So why do I endure? So Hebrews says, therefore, since we have a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which entangles us, and let us run with endurance. Since we have a great cloud of witnesses, why do we run? Because we have this great cloud of witnesses. Why do we endure? Because they did. That great cloud of witnesses is referring back to what he just said. The whole list of all of those men and women who were flawed and yet acted on the trusting that God was good and is doing good. Trusting that they saw God in everything, doing good for him, doing good for them. And because they are witness to say, it's true. This is this mystical part of God's body that we cannot clearly understand. And yet he tells us those witnesses are part of us. And together they form this, this past and present and future procession to the throne. And it's all one procession, all one body that goes to that throne, which is where we find the mercy and grace. We're not alone. The kingdom is a community, not an individual. The Jews had it right in their minds that they never really thought about individuality. They thought in group think. And really, that's the community of the new kingdom. And so this great cloud of witnesses is a part of us. It's part of the body of Christ. They were people who went through lots of circumstances and consequences and yet acted on the truth that God is absolutely good and doing good for me. He's giving grace for me. He is right here with me. They didn't just think that God was good. They acted on it. Where are those cloud of witnesses? They're actually still living. And this is something, particularly in the Protestant church, we never talk about. Those witnesses are still living, which is an evidence of the fact that eternity is real. And it's evidence that holding on means that there is a continuing life, a continual life in eternity with Christ. They're not. So if we're thinking about people, I've heard people preach on Hebrews before, saying, okay, so there's a race, and it's like the races of the Roman races, and you're in this big stadium, and you're running around, and the witnesses are out there cheering. Not true. First of all, in a marathon, do you stay in the auditorium? No, you actually go out into the city. And in the city, the witnesses are spread all over the place, urging you on. You can do this. Yes, you can do this. When Christian ran the marathon, Bill and I went, and we knew points that we mapped it out, points that we could see him. And we kept on going all over the city. And we knew this because Bill had run a marathon years before that. So we understood that there were places you could go. And so we would go from one to the other. And I remember so distinctly, Bill was so focused on being able to see Chris to say, not for his sake, but to say to Chris, you can do it, you can do it. So much so that he's like sprinting. And yeah. Bill's 6'2". I'm 5'3". He's sprinting to get to these places. And literally, I fall over a curb. I land flat on my face. He's still running. And I'm like standing there like, it doesn't even matter. And I literally have to get up and just keep going. It doesn't matter. But he keeps doing that. And at one point, toward the end, probably mile 18, 19, and I can see this so clearly, he actually went into the race and he ran with Christian. This is the witnesses. This is what the witnesses are doing. If I would have gone in there and run with them, it wouldn't have meant anything. Because I don't know what that's like. And like, oh, mom's going to run two minutes a minute. Big deal. But Dad knows. He's been through this. He knows. And he could say to Christian, you've only got this many more miles. You are doing so good. It's really from here on in. Just take it easy. Just take it easy. So he could say because he'd been through. So witnesses are ones who have already understood what it took to get through and the joy it was to be able to get through. Right now, stay here. Keep breathing. Don't panic. You can still do this. I know it's hard. I know your legs are numb. I know that it's really hard. Just keep going. And the witnesses can say this. They know exactly what has been going on.
Well, and very seasoned runners who run a marathon will always go back at the end.
Yep. And to run back with somebody.
Run people in.
Yep.
Go check people in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that is so helpful there. In a place where witnesses come. In fact, I asked Bill. He didn't know what I was teaching on. I just said, tell me about your marathon. Tell me how you ran it. And he said, there's an adrenaline you get from people saying, you can do it. Yes, you can do it. There's this huge adrenaline. And so this is what he's talking about here. So since we have this great cloud of witnesses who are running it with you, who are saying, you can do it. I've been through it. I know what you're feeling, but you can do this. You can do this.
You know what we tend to say, though? You know, I'm thinking like it tends to be like, yeah, that's nice, but that's just not how you run. Actually, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Ironic.
Well, but the interesting thing is, our witnesses actually not only want to see you finish, they need to see you finish, because they're part of a relay team. So it's a marathon relay team, And they know that without you finishing, they never get to get the full restoration. So they're cheering you on so that all of the team can finish. So I don't know if you've ever run a relay race. Unbeknownst to my children, I actually did run in relay races as a kid. Hated it. Just hated it. Passing baton. And that's all I can remember is passing baton. But I remember your full being is with the person running on your relay team. Come on, run. Whether you're standing and waiting for the baton or you've already finished. You're like, come on, because all of us together are one. And that's what the witnesses are. We're all one. Without you, we can't finish the race. The full restoration comes when we've all finished. So we want you to finish well. We want you to be able to endure so that we can all be together. And they feel that camaraderie of being in a relay race. Like we're all one. When you're in a relay race, unless there's a lot of dysfunction, you feel like that person running is you. I mean, maybe you've done swimming. What's it called when you do the swimming that you relays. The relays? Obviously, I really hate swimming. You're almost your whole body is kind of like swimming with them, right?
They
running
they
with.
Touch the wall.
Yeah, you're just like yes. That's what the cloud of witnesses are. That's what Abraham and Moses. Think about that. Abraham and Moses and Samson and Samuel. They're your witnesses. They're on your relay team going, yes, come on, Julia. Yeah, come on, Julia. You can do it. Kristen, come on, you can do this. They're all doing that. That is a real good reason to be able to endure. But also because Jesus endured through the process so that we would have a race to even enter. He endured with joy because he wanted us to be able to enter that process, that race, because it is in the race where we are transformed. It's not so we get to the end of the race, it's so that we actually participate in the race, because it's in the race that we are transformed.
And you know, that's kind of like in the relays for swimming. I remember my son was little and it was for one of the bigger competitions, classic, the one below. Mm-hmm. But there was a boy on the older team, the team above, that didn't show up, so they couldn't have a relay, so they asked him to swim up. He said, I'm not good enough. And I said, if you don't swim, none of them get to swim.
Right.
But if you swim, then you all get to swim. They just need somebody.
Yeah.
So he did swim up, and then they ended up taking first place.
Great.
Like, I'm not good enough. No, but if you don't do it, they don't get to experience
that. Exactly. And that's a great reminder of us. So if we aren't willing to endure, then other people don't get to be in the race. So our enduring is not, again, it is not an individual thing. It is definitely a community within the kingdom. So if it is what Jesus worked for, to prepare a race for us so that we would have a place that we are transformed, that we would have a race that we actually come out with endurance, that we come out with stronger muscles, that we come out with being able to get through that. If that's what Jesus did, think about the fact when we say, yeah, I'm not going to endure this one. I'm going to sprint this one. What does it say? It's like you when you receive the gift from your husband, right? It's you saying, I don't need this. That was nice of you, Jesus, but you know, I just want to get through this. I don't want the gift you're giving me. I don't want the transformation. I just want to get to the end where it feels good. And he's saying, no, don't you get it? The gift is actually right in the midst of it. It's not at the end, it's at the in the midst of it. This is the gift that I'm giving you. The transforming time is there. And so we abuse not only what Jesus did for us, but his joy. Karen, what did you say when you did that with your husband?
Uh-oh.
What happened to his face? It just, right? Like
just like
Yeah. Think about that. That's exactly what we're doing. Every time we say, I don't want to endure this. I just want to sprint through it, get through it, and I'll see you on the other end, God. I don't want to be in the moment here. I don't want to have to breathe in your presence here because this is a hard place. I just want to get through it. And he's saying, oh, I'm giving you my breath here. I'm running with you. And you're saying, yeah, not now. So it was as if when Christian was running and Bill came to run with him, he said, yeah, Dad, you know, just go away. I just want to get done with it. Rather than receiving that presence there in the minute now when it was hard.
And sometimes even like in a marathon, like it's not even like you need someone talking to you, but just them being beside you.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. You just that point of being beside you is a huge thing. And when we reject it, we reject what he's trying to do for us. We reject the transformation for ourselves and the union. We reject the union, which is the whole point.
I wonder if sometimes it takes some humility, though, to slow down.
You think? Yes.
I mean, you can hear yourself sprint through.
Yep.
Hold your breath, close your eyes, and just sprint through to the end.
Yep.
In the point of pride.
Yes. All the time. All the time.
Or you could start out slow and give up. Like, when you start running, or maybe it's my age, but it's like I'm very in the moment when I first start. I
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, before I know it, and John always tells me, and he teases me because I run a route, it's very easy for me just to peel off at certain points. You know, but he always makes me promise, give it half a mile. You know, and I know where half a mile is, but before I know it, I'm in a rhythm and I'm breathing right,
yes.
And I'm,
yes.
I feel good, and then
yep.
I finish.
Yeah.
So maybe
yeah.
sometimes those rough times, you know, like when you kind of feel like giving up, they're just reminders. You got to stick it out.
Right.
So I'm not even sprinting because I won't sprint. You know, when I'm running, no.
Yep. Yep.
I just find I'm like that.
Yes.
You know, even when I'm moving
yeah.
slow.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful picture because I think there are lots of people who've gone through hard stuff. So that when it comes beyond some of those hard things, they realize, what's the worst that could happen? Whatever happens, Jesus is still with me. So I can now do that with a rhythm. I'll much more succumb to that rhythm than I would have normally. And that's the practice. That, okay, here's another hard circumstance. I can run with breath here. I can run with him here rather than try to get out of it.
I think sometimes that involves learning to settle into pain.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't think it cares. And sometimes runs are really painful.
Mm-hmm.
And I never, like, even if I settle into my breath, like, I have a side ache or sometimes they're just painful.
Mm-hmm.
It is true that sometimes we live with pain.
Yep. And it's true with Christ's endurance. He never got out of breath, right? He never separated himself from God. And yet there was pain in it. So it isn't. So when we talk about joy, it isn't the elimination of pain. It is the extreme understanding that this is restoring me. This pain right here is restoring me. Whether it's a physical pain or an emotional pain, this is God's gift to restore me. And to understand that the fullness of that restoration will be beyond anything we can even imagine. So we also receive, or we also choose to endure, so that we receive the fullness of what God has intended for us, which is what the last part of what we're talking about, especially when it says, it is for discipline that you endure. And then it says, verse 10, for they disciplined us, our fathers, for a short time as seemed best for them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness, our wholeness. That's the whole purpose of it. Next week we'll talk about discipline. But for now, just that overview of understanding that it is in the enduring that we are transformed. It's not getting to the end of the race. It's in the enduring that we are transformed. So how do we endure? From Hebrews, it tells us, First of all, by remembering the witnesses, by hearing the witnesses, by listening to the witnesses, you can do this. So just what Linda did for us last week, when she's asking, so in what ways have you been faithful? In what ways are you struggling to be faithful? And then she began to read through Hebrews 11 and saying, Moses did this. How do you do that? David did this. How do you do that? This is one of the ways we remember the witnesses. Oh, I have some real family situations. Oh, yeah, how did Joseph handle that? And it begins to give you someone that is beside you that you know continues to live because he chose to say God is doing something good. In fact, Joseph is a great example because at the very end, what does Joseph say? You meant this for harm, but God meant it for good, for life. He chose to trust that. I can do that. Did I go through what Joseph went through? No. But I can do that as well. It also tells us by laying aside our own encumbrances and sin. We're going to talk about the encumbrances and sin next week. But just the fact that we have witnesses that say to us, you can lay that aside. I'm telling you, you really don't need it. It's really not going to bring you life. I've been there and I know. You can hear that. On a marathon route, what you see is stranded coats, pants, everything, all over the streets. People just lay them aside. Why? Because they realize they don't need them. They need very little. And if it were Rome, they might say they don't need anything, right? Take it all off. But they just leave everything there, and they think nothing of it. In fact, it happens so much and so prolifically that there's actually a crew after the marathon that cleans it up and brings it to the homeless people.
Yeah, I was the managing director of the Salvation Chicago Marathon.
Oh, there you go.
Years, and that's what we, and the start line was,
oh,
I mean, once 40,000 people blew through there,
yeah,
it was like mounds of clothes.
Yeah, mounds of clothes. Yeah, and not just back with crummy clothes, right?
Oh no,
like
nice,
really
like,
nice
like
clothes.
Nice New Balance, you know, running clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, we would collect everything and we clean it all and then donate it.
So. Yep. Wow. Yep. They know, they don't need it. They right away they begin. I don't need this.
Well, more importantly,
getting a dress too.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was gonna say more importantly, you go to the race thinking you need a lot more than you do.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
can't possibly run this without
it
this.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Most,
right.
Most
yeah.
of
right.
It was because it was like 30 degrees when the race was
yeah.
started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's usually
know,
it's October.
But
yeah.
You know, you do
yeah.
overdress too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You think,
yep.
Oh, it's 40 right now.
Or you think
right.
you need like the belt that has like five water bottles.
Right.
On.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And you realize that
no,
just weighs you down.
Take care of
yeah.
Along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly. But also then it says. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. And this is that place where we've always assumed that we're fixing, oh, we're looking at Jesus way in the back. No, no, no. Actually, the words mean looking to. He's right here. I'm going to stay right with him. Here he is, right here. I'm going to look to him. He's not waiting for me at the finish line. In fact, we come to his presence when we receive whatever his presence is for that day. Whatever it is in the grace he's given us, whether it be you being stopped by a red light when you're in a hurry, or your child just throwing a tantrum, or something really tough, that day, that's where Jesus is, that's where you look, right now, not somewhere at the end where everything looks good.
Or where everything looks bad, and I think that's where the anxiety comes from. It's like this right now.
Oh, yeah, how, yeah, could I even continue?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can I go? And he says, don't look there. Look right now at me. I'm right here with you. I'm trying to give you breath here now.
I think I've even seen a painting of this thing that is discombobulated in my mind, of someone running a race with Jesus standing
yeah,
again.
Yeah, I have
that,
too.
Or that's how I have thought of it
yep.
for so long. It's a painted image in my mind.
Right.
This makes perfect
yep.
sense. I don't
yes.
have any problem burning that.
Yeah, good.
But we do. I think from the time I was little, I grew up with that image.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we always
fix your eyes on Jesus
yeah.
and run the race.
Right.
And think eternities in the future.
Right.
And
right. Exactly. Exactly.
The But then you have the one with this feet in the sand, 2 feet, two sets of feet walking.
Yeah. 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 So you see the one, which is
there you go. Right. Right, exactly. Exactly.
But the only thing that's before us is the joy, right?
Right. And so isn't that interesting that right within two verses it says, you run the race set before you. And then Jesus turns around and says, no, it's joy set before you. Mm-hmm. It's not a race. It's joy set before you. It's joy because, I mean, I get goosebumps thinking about this. It's joy. You're being transformed today. Do you want the breath that transforms you, that gives you my life in you, or not? Today is when you get transformed.
Well, it's funny, he's talking about running. It doesn't make me think like, oh, I should probably run a race. It's like, oh, I want to go out and run.
Yeah.
It's like a, you don't see it as a race, you see it as joy.
Right, right, exactly. So here, right in here, Jesus is just going, yeah, let's switch your paradigm. It's not a race, it's joy. It's joy. It's great joy. And as you're running this joyous race, you get to go, I get to be a witness to somebody behind me. And I have someone in front of me, and then I have him here next to me, running it with me, giving me breath in this moment. No matter how hard the moment is, there he is. It says that Jesus is the author of our faith. And when it talks about that, basically says he's the one who established the race. There wasn't a race because we shut it off. We shut off that union. And now he says, here, I'm going to give you a process to get that union back. And it's the process that brings the union. It's the process that you get more and more of his breath. It's not getting to the end, but that process. So he's the author. He established the race for you. But he also perfects and completes it for you. He's there with you. I'm giving you breath now. I'm giving you breath now. I'm right here. I'm right here. This is my gift to you, being right here with you in the midst of this. And then it says, by considering him who has endured hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart. In his endurance, if I am to consider his endurance and his purpose, then I have to remember that in his endurance, he didn't withhold anything. And if that's the case, he's not withholding anything from me now. He's not withholding good from me now in this hard situation, because he's giving me himself. He's giving all of him to me. And his endurance was done with joy, because he had this full view of me fully restored. He was absolutely joyous at the restoration that he was accomplishing. And so as he's running beside me, he's trying to give me that view. I'm giving you full restoration. This is part of it. Isn't it cool? So, Carmel, you have a trainer. Mm-hmm. In the midst of training, do you ever think, what is he doing to me?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet you know he's not trying to punish you, right?
And I would never push myself as hard as he pushes me.
Exactly.
I would never consider doing
the
things
right.
that we do. Like Robin has walked up sometimes.
And what do you say? She's like, make her do it.
Which is exactly what we say in life too, right?
Yeah.
And yet, he is so focused on you. He knows he knows exactly what your tendencies are, what your weaknesses are, and where he needs to strengthen you.
And I actually said to a trainer once, I was like, why aren't we working on my strengths? There are things I can really do. He's like, I'm interested in your weaknesses.
Yes.
That's the only thing I've developed.
Yes, yes. Which brings us back to all that vulnerability stuff. Are you willing to show him the weaknesses? Or, I mean, Carmel, do you ever not tell him, like, where you're weak? Like, I'm not going to tell him I was eating sugar 3 days.
That
what? That you don't want to show him your weaknesses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And does it help? Does it help with the training? No, of course not. Of course not.
Well, they know it anyway.
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing is you try to hide it like, oh, no, I was good this week.
And, you know, it's so funny because, like, there are times, like, where I can't do a push-up and he will support my fat tummy to help me.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh. I can't have anybody.
I know.
But that's just part of it.
Yep.
Like, so
Yeah.
Or when he goes to measure me, I'm just like, I do not want you to measure me. You know, or let's take your fat test today.
And yet, he knows this is exactly what you need to have exactly the full body.
And he says, like, you have to, like, there was a time where I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to work out. We're not going to look at weight and measurements.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All of that. And he's like, if you don't look at it, you're not going to, you're not going
to
change.
Yes, yes. So that talks back to the vulnerability we've talked about before. His endurance also included men who rejected it. And that's what it means by he endured the hostility by sinners against himself. He has endured and continues to endure men who say, no thanks. Don't want your breath today. Mm-hmm. Has he endured you saying, don't want your breath today? This specifically here is talking about those who deny his breath always is a constant. So he's not talking about us when we say, don't want it today. But it is something he's had to endure. He has prepared with pain and sweat and great cost restoration for everyone. And yet there are some people, because it is an invitation that's open, that say, either I don't want it or I don't need it. And he's had to endure that as well. Which helps us, I think, in our some of our hard circumstances, because our hard circumstances, we're going to find a lot of rejection. We're going to find a lot of people saying things to us that we should be doing or we shouldn't be doing. And to know that he continually endures that so that we can have it. I don't want to be the one that is rejecting his breath, though. This, considering him, helps us not to grow weary or lose heart. The word grow weary here actually means that you're growing weary from constant work. And the fact of the matter is he's saying, I've done the work. I just want you to run the race with me. I want you to run it so that you get the benefit for it. The work is done. I want to run now with you. And so if you're saying, no, I'm going to do that striving, that determination, I'm going to sprint and had to get through this so I can say I've done it, then you're saying, I don't want your work. I don't want what you've done. I'm rejecting it. Thank you, Lisa. So that's that growing weary. So you don't grow weary when you look at him and say, no, he's already done the hard work of it. He's already given me the race. How am I to say, I don't want to run that race. I want to run a sprint. If I keep looking, oh, he's run the marathon for me already. He's set up a marathon for me to transform me. I don't want to say no to him and run a different race. Because if I run a different race, then I will grow faint and not be able to run the race he has for me, which is what it means by to lose heart. To lose heart actually means to have your spirit faint, to have your breath faint, to lose breath.
Well, I'm thinking running a different race also, you're getting kind of a different reward, right? I mean,
yep.
Essentially he's saying, I've already gotten that medal.
Yep.
That you get
right.
For you.
Right.
I've already gotten your medal. Let's just do this. Let's
right.
Just do the race. When you opt out, you're like, what are you running for?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. Which is why then all the things he's told us about Jesus and what he's done for us, we have to really grasp that it's freedom he's giving us, that it's truth he's giving us, that it's joy he's giving us, so that we run the right race, so that we respond to freedom, to truth, and to joy. Rather than, instead of seeing the race as joy, then we take that connotation of endure, like, I just got to get through this, because it's not joy. I'm responding to something completely different. When I run a different race, when I do sprint, I'm responding to, I just want a reward rather than I want transformation, the joy of transformation. So knowing that that Christ is giving us is freedom, vulnerability to come to him as we are, is truth, to know that he is good and always giving good, is joy, that the race itself is the place of transformation. If I know that, then I will be able to respond with drawing near in intimacy, in vulnerability. That I will be able to respond with holding fast to the truth that he is doing good for me right now in this hard situation. That I will be able to respond to the joy of him transforming me by enduring in this race, by knowing if I breathe here now, if I remain now in this present moment and receive what he's giving me now, I can have endurance and endure and then receive that joy. Really, all it is this beautiful picture of Eucharisteo, this receiving the gift of freedom and truth, and then discovering joy in the midst of receiving this race, discovering this joy. And then, of course, you know, the rest of chapter 12, he's going to bring up that if I have received the gift and I am finding this joy, there's going to be gratitude. There's going to be thanks, which is what we've talked about from the very beginning. This is Eucharisteo. So Eucharisteo is not just seeing things that I like and saying, thank you, God. It's all of this. It's all of receiving the freedom and the vulnerability to be who I am. It's receiving the fact that God is doing good, even in the hard situations. It's receiving the fact that it's the race that brings transformation to me, and me breathing with him today in this moment, I will receive the joy that he has, that he's restoring me. He has this great, like, I can just see his eyes going, oh, this is so cool. Yes, you can do it because you're getting restored. That transfers to me this joy. And of course, it only produces thanksgiving, Eucharisteo. So this is why Hebrews is Eucharisteo all the way through, setting that up for us. And I knew this would be a short lesson, but a really needful understanding. So I want to ask you, how does this change than how you live today, this moment? How does it look different for you to right now, where you're at, take in what Christ is giving you of himself right now? Let me give you an exercise. Put down your pens and pencils. Put down everything on the floor. I want you to be really quiet, and I don't want you to close your eyes because some of the gifts he gives are visual. But I want you to take in any way you think you can, where Christ is giving you himself now in the gift. I want you to practice right now Eucharisteo. So don't care what anybody else is doing. Take him in, and then I'm going to ask you, where is he now? Where's a grace now that you're taking in? So it's a practice of being in the moment rather than thinking about where I'm going to. And here's the temptation. We'll look outside and we'll go, oh, I cannot wait to bike today. I cannot wait to work in my garden today. I cannot wait to run today. That's not being in the moment. Being in the moment is, all right, now he has breath for you. So take just a few minutes and be quiet and take him in. How long did it take you to actually be here? To actually take in something of him? Did it take a long time? Were you able to get it right away? Yes? No?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yep. Tell me some of the things that you took in that were just a union, a grace of his.
I think the first was just a feeling of not, of permission to not jump into the next moment. Just, so it was first that feeling.
That's cool. That's very cool.
So then, like, just listening. Like, being able to hear the kids and the fountain, see a moth and a bird, and just, and it was okay to just, it was okay to just do that, and the other stuff that's in the next moment would be, still be there, and it was okay to be in that moment.
Okay, that's just a really interesting comment, Kim. Do you think that that's true, that we often don't give ourselves or others permission to be in the moment? Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think that is like a huge thing in me. I rarely give people permission to be in the moment. And I mean, you know what, in my teaching, right? We're like zooming along. Come on, come on, next thing, next thing, next thing. Be in the moment, giving permissions. That's a great.
And I think I don't do that with my kids enough. No.
That's a tough thing.
Just be like kids.
Yeah.
And it's loud and it's noisy and it's messy and it's okay.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And even just stuff with myself, I always feel like I need to jump ahead and hurry up and solve it, because then, you know, I know the next big problem is looming ahead. But then I'm going to solve that too, so I just want to get on with it instead of just.
Yeah. Which is a really interesting way to live. So we almost always live in the future, which isn't real. Well, do you ever think about that?
But that's the fruit of a mentality that you have control.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like that you have things you have to control that are coming up.
Yep.
You know?
And how odd that we live in a place that rarely looks like what we think it's going to.
Right, right, exactly, exactly. Interesting, I think it was it this morning or yesterday's? I think it was this morning's paper. They had an article that in the Chicago area, we live so fast, always living in the future, that the problem with heroin has become so prevalent because it is the fast drug. It is the drug that will quickly get us out of this situation. And Chicago is the top place of heroin abuse.
So schools in Naperville just did.
Yep. That's what you hear. And I've known that, but it was so interesting to read the article to say it's because we are in such a fast pace living that we live in the future, that the children, the kids, the teens, whomever are doing it, have to choose a fast drug to get as fast as they can out of the situation. Mm-hmm. Because we live in the future. What other things did you take in just now?
I can hear my son's voice.
Interesting. Interesting. That's interesting.
My first thought was Quickie and Boston. I didn't know exactly what he was saying, but but just the sheer joy that he brings to our life. He's so spirited.
Yes.
He's got a big heart, but he's also very vulnerable.
Which is a perfect balance.
And I just love that little guy.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that great? What else?
I heard the water, and it's just made me feel like that.
Yes.
When you think about how God is rushing in everywhere.
Oh. Mm. That's good. What else?
This brings. Go ahead. I was like, I have a terrible
headache. And I was like, oh, God's probably telling me I'm so dehydrated and don't have enough sleep. You know what I mean? It was like, yep. Sometimes you just, yep. Like, oh, this moment, he's actually trying to speak to me about, like, my life. You know what I mean? Like, hey, you need a lot more than what you're giving yourself.
That's funny. That's where my brain went too. It's, I don't have any pain right now.
Interesting. Carmel, what were you going to say? Or Karen?
Well, yesterday, the weather was like today, and I, even in the bad weather, I take my dog out. But when I was out with Leo, I was just really enjoying the weather, and I'm in the backyards, and then it brought me to the past and the future, because every nice day, we would be out with the kids. I mean, this neighborhood.
Yes.
You know, and hearing the kids reminds me just how vibrant, and every day we go out, we check out different parks, we'd be in the backyard, so I'm like, oh, I'm here all alone with Leo, and it was nice, because I'm like, he's getting me outside, because otherwise, and I just thought about, gosh, when the kids were little, we'd be out that door as soon as, you know, they were up and going, and then I thought, yeah, it'll be nice when I have grandkids, you know, so it was kind of the whole,
Anybody else?
I'm talking of speeding ahead. I'm still enjoying the whole metaphor of the race. And when you said you're on your own race, I don't think of sprints. I was thinking, well, if we kept that with the metaphor of marathons, marathons are planned out, right, the course, and you have, like, spots where there's water and stuff.
Yep.
So if you want your own race, it's like, okay, I'm just going to leave the course.
That's good.
So then you have no witnesses cheering on. No water. You're like all by yourself.
No porter.
That's great. Yeah, that's really good.
So, I mean, how hard would that be?
Yeah.
Well, and that makes me think too, you may very well reach the finish line and get the reward, but the trip was not joyful.
Well, and you didn't get transformed at all. I mean, you are there without anything. I like that. That's really good.
I know we're like full of running letters. But when you said how long did it take you to get there, it just made me think how, remember a trainer telling me like how important recovery heart rates are? Like, he would always ask, have us time, how many seconds it takes us to get to our resting heart rate? And he's like, I don't care how high you can go. I don't care how fast you can go. I don't care how long you can go. He's like, actually, the best sign of health is how quickly you can get back to the resting heart rate. And that's actually what's most impressive about Lance Armstrong, what's most impressive about all these people, is where their resting heart rate is and how quickly they can get to that resting heart rate. And when you said that, I was like, oh my goodness, I think rarely do I think, in this time of trial, how quickly can I get to my resting heart rate?
Right.
How quickly can I get to that place of rest?
Yep.
Or am I just going to like think that the method of proving myself is to strive and strive and strive and strive, you know?
Yep.
And how hard it is to get to that resting heart rate.
Yep.
Because you have to sit and you have to be still.
Yep.
I remember one morning John was trying to get my resting. He goes, and I would be like, he'd be like, sit still. And I'd want to say something. He goes, don't talk. Close your eyes. It's hard to just be still. And, you know, John's half dead at his resting heart rate.
It does mean being completely present right now where you're at, not going even the next 5 minutes forward. And even when we all sat here, of course, and I do this all the time, I'm thinking, okay, where are we going next with this? What do I need to do next? Rest, Jill. Take in the breath too. So all of that to say and to show you, it isn't what we commonly do. We do think that striving and sprinting without breath is a good thing, and yet Jesus keeps telling us, I'm not in that picture that you have of me at the end of the race. I'm not there. I'm right here. And you have a choice every moment to be here taking his breath in or not. This is what he's worked for, though. Whatever circumstance you're in right now, this is what he prepared for you to transform your body, your mind, your spirit to be completely restored. I would suggest that just today, once, take a sprint and see how it makes you feel and how much trying to catch breath after a sprint is so exhausting. I'm not going to ask you to run a marathon, just the sprint, so you know that's your typical, that's your norm. And he's giving you a much better way to live, even through the hard circumstances. So, Father, we praise you that you know what kind of race we need, that you've set it out for us, and that it is not something we just have to tense ourselves up and sprint through, but that it is actually joy. It is the place of transformation that you have prepared for us. May we today breathe with you. May we choose the breath you're giving us. May we be aware of the places that we begin to sprint. And may your hand on us to slow us down be received with gratefulness and joy. In Jesus' name, amen.